We're going to look at Perek Chof Zayin. We'll start from the beginning of the Perek, just to give it some context. Perek Chof Zayin, Parashas Pinchas, obviously. The story of the daughters of Tzlafchad. Very interesting. The daughters of Tzlafchad. So we'll just quickly go through the whole story, even though we're going to focus just on one pasuk, and it's a very short pasuk. So the story begins, Vatikravna benois Tzlafchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Mochir ben Menashe ne Mishbechois Menashe ben Yosef. So we get the whole lineage, the whole introduction of who exactly we're talking about over here. So the daughters of Tzlafchad come and they approach Moshe, as we'll see in a second. Veidash Moshe benoisav, Machla Noya v'Chogla Milka v'Sirta. We get given their names. Okay, and then what do they do? Zavatamoidna. They stand in front of Moshe and in front of Elazar and all the leaders and the community. Pesach Oyel Moyed, Leimor in front of the Oyel Moyed, in front of the sanctuary. And this is what they say. Avinu Meis Bamidbar. Our father died in the desert. And he was not one of the rabble rousers who was part of the rebellion of Korach. Ki v'chetoy meis. He died because of his own sin. What was his sin? Let's just quickly look. What was his sin? So Rashi says, there's two opinions. If you have a look in the Rashi, on Pasuk Gimel, so, Rabbi Akiva says he was the person who collected wood on Shabbos and was then arrested, and they didn't know what to do with him. And they had to find out from Hashem how you punish such a person. Rabbi Shimon says he was one of the people after the story of the spies who went to try and go to Israel after they heard that the spies had made a mistake. I'm interested really in Rabbi Akiva's opinion over here. Anyhow, Rabbi Akiva chetoy meis, back in the pasuk, he died of his own sin. Uvanim loy hoyu loy, and he had no sons. So this is their thing. Lo ma yigora shem avinu mitoich mishpachta kein lo ben. Why should the name of our father and his family be downgraded because he doesn't have a son? Allow us to have a portion in the land, an inheritance in the land of Israel, amongst our father's brothers. Okay, so what's their thing? They want to know that Moshe is dividing up the land, and they're not going to get any because they have no male offspring for their father. Here comes the pasuk we're going to look at. Vayakrev Moshe es mishpaton lifnei Hashem. Moshe brings their mishpat, their case, he brings their case in front of Hashem. In other words, Moshe doesn't have an answer. That's what's happening. He doesn't have an answer. So he brings the question in front of Hashem, and in the next piece, then Hashem responds to him, and he says that the daughters of Tzlafchad have spoken appropriately, and they should be given an opportunity. And then he gives the breakdown of how inheritance works according to Torah law. But the thing we'll focus on over here is that Moshe did not know the halacha, and therefore he had to go to Hashem, and he had to say, "Nu, help me out over here. What am I supposed to tell these people? I have an issue. What do I respond?" Let's have a look at Rashi. Rashi, Pasuk Hey. Vayakrev Moshe es mishpaton. So Rashi says Moshe brought their case. Says Rashi, nis alma halacha mimenu. At this point in time, the halacha eluded Moshe. In other words, that implies that Moshe did know the law at some point. At some point, Hashem had taught him what you do in such a case. But now that these girls appeared before him, nis'alma mimenu halacha, for the life of him, he could not remember it. It completely eluded him. Why did that happen? V'chan nifro al shenota la Torah loyma v'adavar ashik shemikem takrivun eloi. This was the time where Moshe was punished from an incident that had happened 40 years earlier. What happened 40 years earlier? Is that Yisro, Moshe's father-in-law, came to him just as the Jews had come out of Egypt. And he says, you cannot do this. You cannot run the entire justice system of the Jewish people alone. You have to create a hierarchy. There has to be some kind of a system. So he said, okay, if that's the case, that's what I'll do, and I'll listen. And he sets up this whole hierarchy, and Moshe then says, if you have an issue, you'll take it to the lower courts. And if the lower courts cannot deal with it, you'll go to the higher courts. V'chol adavar akoshe, and anything that is difficult, you'll bring to me. So that Rashi says, notala Torah. He took like a crown for himself. He kind of put himself on a pedestal, and he said, I'll take the difficult questions. So because of that expression that Moshe used, as we very well know, Hashem is tremendously exacting of tzaddikim. So because he's such a great person, he should never have spoken that way. And this is the direct cause of why he forgot the halacha in this particular case, or it eluded him in this particular case, and he didn't know what to tell the daughters of Tzlafchad. Dovar acher. Alternatively. Now we've learned enough Rashi's, according to the Rebbe's insight, to know that when you see Dovar Acher, straight away you should be asking questions. Dovar Acher, an alternative explanation. The truth is, it would have been appropriate for this portion of the Torah, the story of Seder Nachalos, of how you determine the hierarchy of inheritance, should have been written by Moshe in Moshe's name. Ela shezochu benois Tzlafchad v'nichtava al yadan. It's just that the daughters of Tzlafchad were special people, and they had a special merit, and because of their merit, they earned the opportunity that this portion of the Torah should be written because of them, because they raised the issue. Okay, so what's bothering Rashi? What's bothering Rashi? Why doesn't Moshe know what to tell them? That's clearly what's bothering him. Why does he have to go consult with Hashem? It's very obvious. That's what's bothering him. Why go consult with Hashem? Moshe, generally speaking, he knew halachas, no problem. How come over here he suddenly has to consult? So there's two possibilities. One possibility is that he was being punished to forget temporarily the halacha because he had spoken with a tinge of what sounds like ego to say, bring the difficult things to me. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that these people were great people and they deserved to have their piece of Torah in their name. And therefore Hashem did not allow Moshe to know the halacha and it was going to come through these people. So those are the two options. The obvious question is, are these the only two options? One option is Moshe's forgetting the halacha. The other option is it's being credited to these people. Are those the only options? Let's think for a second. What other option might there be why Moshe would have to go and ask this question to Hashem? Any suggestions? What other possible option could there be? Ah, interesting, because Moshe was involved in his case. So therefore, why should he not know the halacha? So therefore, why would he not know the halacha just because either he knew the halacha, he didn't know the halacha. But Rashi says why it was taken from him. Rashi, if you're going to go with the explanation that he forgot the halacha, Rashi tells us why he forgot the halacha, because he had taken a Torah for himself. So that the one option is he forgot. The other option is it was to be credited to them. What's another third option? Exactly. The third option is he didn't know. He hadn't been told yet. Right? He hadn't been told yet. Was that so? What? Is that so radical? Okay, you could say Tzlafchad's daughters had more bina. That's true. But simply, maybe he wasn't told the halacha yet. There are other halachas that are still going to come later in the Torah, after this parasha, that Moshe was not told yet. So what's the big deal? Okay, so, you know, why does Rashi have to run into these radical positions? What? Why does Rashi have to run into these radical positions where he says, no, he forgot the halacha, whatever. Just say simply, it wasn't yet taught. Wasn't yet taught. That's all. Just to use as an example, right? Rashi over here says that there's the possibility that this man, Tzlafchad, was the man who had gathered sticks, okay, on Shabbos. Read that story. Moshe also did not know what to do with him. But why? Not because he had forgotten anything. Because that halacha had not yet been taught. That's all. Why is Rashi automatically assuming a radical possibility that Moshe's being punished? So that's question number one. Question number one is, why don't we just simply take the most obvious or apparent explanation, which is Moshe has not yet been told the halacha? Why is that not even a consideration? Question number one. Question number two, if you take the second opinion that Rashi brings is what? That Hashem wanted to give an opportunity to Tzlafchat's daughters because they deserved it, that they should have a Torah portion written in their merit. So how come then, in the other occasions prior to this, where we see that Moshe is only taught a halacha at some later point in time, why doesn't Rashi there explain how come this halacha was only taught at a later point in time? If here he feels it necessary to say the only reason that this halacha was delayed until now was for the sake of giving Tzlafchat's daughters their piece of their 5 minutes of fame, fine. So then let's take again the example of the Mekoshesh. Why did Hashem wait until the incident happened and then only told him the halacha? Rashi doesn't say that, doesn't speak about it. He just takes it for granted that it's an acceptable thing that sometimes you get taught a halacha at a later point. So that's question two. Why over here, according to the second explanation, do we have to justify why Hashem's only telling him the halacha now? Because the second explanation is not saying that Moshe was punished. The second explanation is saying the information was not yet presented. And now it's presented because of Tzlafchat's daughters. Okay? So how come in other places he doesn't tell us why there's a delay in the introduction of a mitzvah? Question, Chazan.
I just want to know that Sheni. What does Rashi say?
We're going to talk about Pesach Sheni shortly. Hold that thought. We're actually going to flip back to Pesach Sheni and we're going to do a comparison. Okay? All right. So now, next question. If the whole purpose of Rashi over here is to tell us what? To tell us why Moshe had to consult. So then the Dibur HaMaschil, remember, Rashi always only puts the words into the Dibur HaMaschil, into the headline that he wants to explain. So what does he want to explain? Vayakrev Moshe. Why Moshe had to go and ask Hashem. Why does the word Mishpaton also have to be in the Dibur HaMaschil? Also has to be in the headline. He's not explaining the word Mishpatan. He's explaining the Vayakrev Moshe, the fact that Moshe had to go and ask. So surely it should have just simply said Vayakrev Moshe in the Dibur HaMaschil. Okay, question number four. You want to talk about Pesach Sheni? Let's flip back to Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is in Parshas Ba'aloischa. It is Perek Tes, the ninth Perek of Bamidbar. And it is Pasuk Tes, the ninth Pasuk as well. If you're looking inside the Gutnik Chumash, it's on page 918. Basically, what happens over there is that they told the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach that they have to bring the Pesach offering. And then there were people, there was a group of people who were impure because they had been in contact with a dead body. And they came in front of Moshe and they complained and they said, Lama Nigora, similar wording, by the way, Lama Nigora. Here they say Lama Yigora. It's almost exactly the same wording. Why should we lose out? And Moshe says, I don't know. And Moshe over there says, let's go back actually to Pasuk Ches. Moshe says, Vayomer Alehem Moshe, Indu, stand by, Ve'eshme'ah, and I will hear, Ma Yitzaveh Hashem Lochem, what Hashem will instruct you. So again, Moshe does not know the halacha over there. And again, there are people who are the catalyst for the story unfolding. Just like here, it's the daughters of Tzlafchad. There it's these people who were impure. Very similar to our story. So what happens next? Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Hashem speaks to Moshe and he tells him, Daber el b'nei Yisrael lema, speak to the Jewish people and tell them, Ish, ish, ki, t'yiye, tomei lo nefesh. If a person will become tomei, impure, because he was in touch, in direct contact with a dead body, oive derech rechoi kolochem, or he was too far away to be able to bring the Pesach offering, either for you, Oyle Doroseichem, or in future generations. Vasa Pesach Lashem, and now he has to bring a carbon Pesach, and introduces the law of Pesach Sheni, that exactly 1 month after Pesach, you get a second chance. Have a look at Rashi on Pasuk Zayin. Sorry, we should have actually read that. Let's go back and read Pasuk Zayin. I'm sorry. Pasuk Zayin. Vayomru ha'anashim ha'emoi lov. The people said, "Anachnu tmeim lenefesh adam. We are impure. Lama nigora. Why should we be pushed aside? Levilti hakrivus korban Hashem b'moyadoi b'soich b'nei Yisrael. Why should we not have the opportunity to bring the korban?" Have a look at that Rashi. So I'm going to run through the first part because it's not relevant to our conversation. Lama nigora. Amalehem. Ein kachim kreven betuma. Amar lo yisrael kadam aleinu b'karam torim v'yachol absor litmeim. Amalehem imdu v'eshmois. Okay, wait and see. Ketalmid hamuftach lishmaya mipi raboi, and of course they we are told that Moshe has this incredible opportunity that he could speak to Hashem, and he's absolutely guaranteed he'll get an answer. Asher yiroid isha shakach muftach shakol zman shahoy yiroid sahoy medaber meshchina. Okay, here comes the part we're relevant, we're interested in. Ureuya hoysa parsha zoi lehei omer al yidei Moshe kishakol atayro kula. It would have been appropriate for this parasha, the story of Pesach Sheni, to be said through Moshe, like every other part of the Torah. Ela shezochu elu, except that these people had a merit. Shetei omer al yedehen, that it should be said through their particular story. Shemagalgalin schus al yedei zakai, because we always look for an opportunity to link something of merit to people who are meritorious. Okay, so it's almost exactly the same, right? Over there, this Rashi is almost identical to the second version of our Rashi. That it should have been taught by Moshe, but there were people that had a special merit and therefore it was taught through them. Except for one thing. In the Pesach Sheni story, the expression that's used is Ru'uyo lehei omer. It should have been said by Moshe. But instead, because these people had a merit, therefore Zochu shetei omer. They were meritorious that it should be said through them. Over here, what does Rashi say? Over here, Rashi says that Re'uya ha'yisa lehi ka sev. It should have been written by Moshe. And Ashazochu v'nichteva, it was written. How come over there, Rashi talks about the parasha being said because of the merit of these individuals? And here he says that the parasha is going to be written because of the merit of individuals. Now that's an interesting question in its own right. And then the final question we have to look at, which is any time that Rashi presents two different opinions, we always have to understand that either one of those opinions is not good enough as a standalone opinion. So we have to examine what is lacking in both of these opinions that Rashi felt compelled to bring the other opinion. Okay, so again, just to recap the five questions. Number one, why is Rashi convinced that Moshe forgot and not that he hadn't yet been told this halacha? Number two, why over here does Rashi feel the need, if in fact, according to the second explanation, the halacha is only being introduced here, why does he have to tell us that it's because of the daughters of Tzlavchad earning it? Number three, why does he use the word mishpatan in the Dibur HaMaschil? Because apparently that's not what he's commenting on. Number four, why the different language between how he says almost the identical explanation here and with Pesach Sheni, that there he talks about the parasha being said, and here he talks about it being written? And lastly, why does he need two explanations? So we thought that what drove Rashi to comment was simply the fact that Moshe has to consult Hashem. And we thought that Rashi wanted to know why. Why does Moshe suddenly have to consult Hashem? What makes this different from every other halacha? The truth is, that's not the full story of what bothers Rashi. Rashi is bothered, yes, he is bothered by the fact that Moshe has to go and consult. He is. But he's also bothered about what Moshe has to consult about. That also is interesting to Rashi. Because Rashi picks up that the Torah uses the word mishpatan. What's mishpat? Mishpat is the conclusion of an halachic process. That means that if you're not sure about what the halacha is, let's just say for argument's sake, you had a kashrus issue in your house and you went to ask the rabbi and it wasn't cut and dry, it wasn't straightforward. So what happens is, in order to get clarity, it's not only that you have to get clarity about what is the psak, what is the bottom line. There are a number of steps you have to get clarity about. So for example, the rabbi might have to ask you, What kind of food was it? Was it hot? Were there other things involved? When last was the dish used? There are a number of details that are relevant. In other words, you have to not only know the bottom line, you also have to know the process. So if Moshe needs to go and ask Hashem what to do in this case because he's never been taught, because that's the other option, right? That was the option we're asking. Why doesn't he say it? If he's never been taught the halacha, then he's not only going to ask Hashem, Mishpaton, what's the bottom line? Surely he should want to know, what's the whole halacha over here? What are all the details? What is the mechanism? What is the procedure? What else do I need to know about this besides just to give them an answer? This is Moshe Rabbeinu over here. It is his responsibility to know how Judaism works, not just to know the bottom line of what you tell people. So therefore, it should have said something like, for example, Vayakrev Moshe es divrehen. It should have said something like that. That's just an example of the wording it could have used. It should have said that Moshe went and took their whole story to Hashem in order to hear how you should approach the story. So that's what bothers Rashi over here. It's not just that Moshe is consulting, because that's easy. It could be he wasn't taught the halacha before. It's that Moshe is consulting about the halacha, not about the devarim, not about the details of the case. If he's never heard this before, he should want to know everything about the case. Therefore, Rashi says it has to be that he did know this from before. He did know the devarim. He knew the details. He remembered the workings of the case. But for some reason, he couldn't remember the conclusion. Mishpaton. He couldn't recall what's the bottom line. That word, mishpaton, that's the word that alerts Rashi to the fact that he obviously forgot. If he had never learnt, he wouldn't be asking for the mishpat. He would have asked for the entire picture. The fact that he's only asking for the mishpat tells me Moshe forgot. Oy vey, Moshe forgot an halacha? What? This is Moshe, the ultimate teacher of Torah. The person that the prophet Malachi says, Zichru Torahs Moshe Avdi, the whole Torah is named after Moshe. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misenayim Asara. Everything that we know about Judaism came from Moshe. Moshe, when he at 120 years old, when he goes up onto the mountain, it says, Lo Nos Leichoi. He hadn't missed even the, like any of his youthfulness. It wasn't like he was becoming forgetful. He was an older man. He was on the ball 100%. Moshe was one with the Torah. How's it possible he should forget? So once Rashi identifies, based on the fact that he's only looking for the bottom line, which indicates that he knew the story, but he couldn't remember how to deal with the story, Rashi says there must be a reason why he forgot. So what's the reason why he forgot? Rashi looks all the way back to when Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Vesadovra kosher yivion elai." You should bring the difficult things to me. You bring the difficult things to me. That was a so-called inappropriate statement on Moshe's behalf. It almost sounds chas v'shalom like ego. And therefore, a person of his caliber was held accountable for it. And this is where it plays out. He gets to forget an halacha. That's the first explanation Rashi gives. But Rashi is dissatisfied with that explanation, even though it speaks beautifully to the word mishpaton, even though it gives us a reason why Moshe should forget an halacha, it has a bit of an issue associated with it. Why would it be that Moshe is only taken to task over an expression that he used inappropriately 40 years later? 40 years later! That's when Hashem is now suddenly going to make him forget an halacha. Now let's think about this for a second. Why is it necessary for Hashem to make Moshe forget an halacha, to punish him for having spoken about bring me the difficult things? He has to punish him? Just tell him, Moshe, you were out of line. That's it. This is a big public spectacle. The Torah tells us over here that they gathered Moshe and Elazar and all the Nasiim and Kol HaEda. It's like a huge crowd over here. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu, for heaven's sake, in 40 years of leadership, one time he says something that may be misconstrued as ego, and he has to be exposed in front of everybody. Why does he have to be exposed in front of everybody? Because we are worried that people will think that as a leader, it's acceptable to speak like that. As Rashi calls it, notal atora li atzmoi, that you give yourself a crown, you put yourself on a pedestal. People who had observed the way that Moshe spoke all those years ago, they might have thought that that's an acceptable way for a leader to speak, and therefore Hashem had to expose it. That's why Rashi is not 100% satisfied with this explanation, because then Hashem should have exposed it 40 years ago. For 40 years, people have believed that that's an appropriate way for a leader to behave. And some of those people are no longer alive by the time Moshe is taken to task. So they never get to see that he's punished for speaking that way. Therefore, Rashi's not 100% satisfied with that explanation, because it seems a bit of a stretch that Hashem would wait 40 years to teach a lesson that apparently is quite an important lesson to teach. So then Rashi says, in that case, I have to bring a second explanation. What's the second explanation? Not that the second explanation is different to the first. The second explanation actually endorses the first explanation. In other words, the second explanation says there are two things at work over here at the same time. At the same time that Hashem wanted an opportunity to punish Moshe for having spoken out of turn, Hashem waits until there's a good reason to do it. What's a good reason? Here you have these girls, the daughters of Tzlafchad, and they have a special schus, they have a special merit for which they deserve to add a portion to the Torah. So Hashem says, let's put the two together. Let's wait until that story where we can give credit to the daughters of Tzlafchad and they can have this beautiful merit of having added a portion to the Torah, and we'll use that as the opportunity to expose that Moshe was out of line to have said, bring me the hard things. And that kind of settles why you had to wait 40 years. So not like we often see with Rashi when the Dover Acher is there to say a different explanation because the first one is lacking. In this case, as you also often see in Rashi, the Dover Acher consolidates the first opinion. So there's no contradiction over here. The first version is that Moshe is exposed and so-called punished. And the second explanation tells us why only now. So as to allow the daughters of Tzlafchad to also have their so-called special opportunity here as well. With that in mind, we can see why it is that as opposed to Pesach Sheni, where he said, Lehei Omer, that the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni was going to be taught in the merit of those people, here it says, Lehi Kosev, that it was only going to be written. Why? In the story of Pesach Sheni, Moshe had not yet been taught that law. In fact, the halacha of Pesach Sheni had not been introduced at all until this point in time where people came knocking on the door and they said, Lama Nigora, why should we lose out? So the nature of that story is the mitzvah is now Lehei Omer, it's going to be told for the first time. That's why Rashi uses the words Lehei Omer, to be told. The mitzvah will be told to Moshe and by extension to the Jewish people for the first time. Whereas here, the mitzvah had already been told to Moshe. It's just that Moshe forgot and now needed to be reminded in the merit of the daughters of Tzlafchad. So the mitzvah is not going to be told, it's just going to be recorded. It's going to be written. Lehi kosev. That's why Rashi here specifically uses the term lehi kosev. Okay? So that's the explanation so far. There's only one thing, though, that we really have to understand over here, and that is that we have to understand that you need to appreciate this is not just about Moshe. The way that Rashi has presented the story, it's like, Moshe, 40 years ago you said something you shouldn't have said, so now you, Moshe, you're going to have some kind of a quote-unquote punishment. It's not only about Moshe. Moshe is at this point in time going to teach the halacha to the Jewish people. So yes, he might have known it before and he might have forgotten it, but it's the first time it's going to be written. It's the first time it will be presented to the Jewish people. And we have an interesting thing, very interesting. The Gemara says in Eruvin that you can never compare learning something for the first time to trying to relearn something that you forgot. And the Gemara basically says that when you learn something for the first time, it goes more easily and smoothly than when you try to regain information that you once knew and you forgot. Interesting, right? Because you'd think it's the other way around. You'd think it's like riding a bicycle and, remind yourself. But the Gemara makes the point that once you've forgotten something, there's kind of like almost a contamination of that information. So over here with Moshe, if the first time Moshe teaches this halacha to the Jewish people is after he's forgotten it and now relearned it, it makes it sound like maybe there'll be something lacking in the experience of the Jewish community hearing this halacha. Isn't that interesting? Because they're getting it, so to speak, I don't want to say secondhand, but repaired. You know, like, if you can imagine, this is often what's used as a mashal. If you can imagine a piece of parchment and somebody writes something on the piece of parchment and then they have to erase it and write something again. So it's never as clear as when it was on fresh parchment. In the same way, an idea that a person learns for the first time is always a lot clearer than what they learn and forget and learn again. So it sounds like everybody's going to lose out over here. It sounds like everybody's going to get a lower grade, lower experience of learning Torah, learning this halacha, because Moshe forgot. So we need to understand what happens over here with this particular halacha, and how is it that the Jews will not lose out in spite of the fact that Moshe forgot and now remembered the halacha. In order to understand that, we need to look at the fact that this is the second time in a very short period of time that Moshe has forgotten an halacha. Who remembers when the other time was that Moshe forgot an halacha? Very shortly before this was the story of Pinchas. Right? It was the story of Pinchas. Just before this, this is the parasha of Pinchas, just at the end of Parashas Balak, what happens is that you have Zimri, who is a leader in the Jewish people, comes in front of Moshe, and again, the same thing. Moshe, Elazar, the Nesiim, everybody, gathers everybody together, and he brings this girl, Cosby, who's a Midianite princess, and he says, we want to get married, who's going to stop us? And not only does he say that, but he acts right in front of everybody. He is intimate with this woman. And Moshe forgets the halacha. What's the halacha? Kanoim poigin boy. That anybody who is vengeful, anybody who is fanatic for Hashem's cause is allowed under those circumstances while they are in the midst of the act, is allowed to take the law into his own hands. And Pinchas gets up and he does it. So we have two cases in close proximity where Moshe forgets halacha. And you think, oi, Moshe forgetting halacha, terrible. Terrible, that means that we're going to get like a second-hand car version of the halacha, because if Moshe has to forget and remember and relearn, then we're not getting it in the same pristine form that we should. We're going to lose out. In that case, the halacha comes through Pinchas. In this case, the halacha comes through the daughters of Tzlafchad. And that's what saves the halacha. How does it save the halacha? The Gemara in Yevamos tells us that if a person, a teacher, a rabbi, makes an halachic ruling. So, and then the incident actually happens. So there's a question whether or not you can accept the ruling of that rabbi. And the Gemara says, well, it depends. If he makes the ruling first, and then the incident occurs, well, obviously, then when he made the ruling, he was objective, so you can accept his authority and apply it to the case. But if an incident happens and then the rabbi decides to paskin a halacha, you cannot necessarily take his opinion because he's responding to an incident. What's wrong with that? Obviously, you should respond to an incident. Isn't that what rabbis are supposed to do? Comes along Tosfos, and Tosfos says, where are we wary of a rabbi responding with an halachic ruling to an incident when the incident is somehow personal? what we call a negia. He's got some personal interest in the case. So if he paskens objectively before such an incident ever happens, well, then we don't know that he has any bias because he's spoken in an objective, technical sense. So if later an incident arises and it involves him, it's okay. He can go back to his objective psak and he can bring it out. But if an incident happens that involves him personally, and then he is asked to rule on it, we can't take his word for it. He's invested over here. He's got a bias. In both the case of Pinchas and the case of Tzlafchad, Moshe cannot rule on the case because he is personally involved. How's he personally involved? So in the case of Pinchas, Zimri says, as Rashi points out at the end of Parashas Balak, that Zimri comes to Moshe and he says, this Midianite woman, that this Cosby, this woman I'm showing you right in front of you right now, is she permitted for me to marry or she's not permitted for me to marry? And if you're going to tell me that she is forbidden to me, Bas Yisroi mi hitira lecha, who allowed you to marry a Midianite woman? You know, that's Moshe had married the daughter of Yisroi, who was a Midianite. So by saying that, Zimri had constructed the case in such a way that Moshe had a vested interest. Whatever he was going to rule on that case would come from a personal perspective because he's got fat in the game. He's married to a Midianite woman. And whatever he's going to argue that she it was before the Torah was given or she converted, whatever, is going to be irrelevant. He is subjective. And the Gemara says clearly that if a rabbi has a subjective interest in a case, he cannot paskin about it. So what does Hashem do? He makes Moshe forget the halacha. That way, the way we get the halacha is not from Moshe, not from his bias. Where do we get it? Pinchas is suddenly inspired. He stands up and he does. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I remember you taught us a halacha. That if a person sees a boy laramis, kanoim poigin boy. That if you see somebody engaged in this kind of a relationship while they're in the act, you can take their law into your own hands. Famously, Moshe says back to him, the person who reads the letter should fulfill its contents. In other words, you brought it up, you take the law now into your own hands. In other words, it's completely sterile, it's completely removed from me, Moshe. You're right, I have a vested interest. Hashem made me forget the halacha, so you could come to the fore and you could be able to present a pristine halacha to the Jewish people. Same thing happens here. Tzlafchad's daughters come in front of Moshe. They've got what ostensibly is just a cut and dry question. May we or may we not get a portion in the land? There are no brothers, there are no sons. May we or may we not have a portion in the land? But they don't present it like that. They present it, V'luhu loy hoya badas Korach. Our father was not part of the Korach rebellion. Oh, now that you've said that, Moshe has a vested interest in this story. Korach is one of the most important challenges, one of the greatest challenges to Moshe's leadership. To tell me he's not part of Korach, now I have a bias. It's a positive bias, but I still have a bias, Moshe says. So what does Hashem do? He makes Moshe forget the halacha. That way, when we get the psak, we're not getting it through Moshe, so it won't be tainted by his bias, and by the same token, it won't be weakened by his forgetting, because his forgetting here is not something negative. On the contrary, his forgetting over here is something positive. His forgetting over here is to allow us the opportunity to get this particular teaching the way it should be taught, in its most honest, objective fashion. So that's why in this particular case, it's on the one hand, these are the two explanations of Rashi together. On the one hand, Hashem causes a situation for Moshe to forget. And on the other hand, he causes it to dafka come through the hands of other people so that they should be able to bring, number one, a pristine, non-biased halacha. And number two, they should be able to bring it without any issues of forgetting because for them, it's brand new information. What's the take-home lesson? Don't know. There's no, in the Sikha itself doesn't tell us a take-home lesson. But I suppose one thing that we could say, right? One thing that we could say that the Rebbe teaches us over here is even when something negative, chas v'shalom, happens, You have to look at the same time to see the positive. Hashem doesn't just send us negative things. The same time that Moshe is forgetting an halacha, he sends Tzlafchad's daughters that the halacha should be able to come out in a healthy way, in a positive way, that they should have a schus, that the Jewish people should be able to learn properly, etc. So we shouldn't get caught up in only seeing the negativity of a situation. We should be open to see how Hashem balances it with positive too. What were you going to say? Eluded. That's true.
Yeah.
So the emphasis is not his forgetting, more Hashem's hiding.